Welcome to Thoughts on the Market. I'm Jim Egan, Morgan Stanley's U.S. housing strategist and co-head of Securitized Products Strategy.
And I'm Sarah Wolf, senior economist and strategist within Morgan Stanley Wealth Management.
And today, why first-time homebuyers are facing a tougher path to ownership. It's Tuesday, June 23rd at 10 a.m. in New York. Buying a first-time home has always been a big step, but for a growing number of first-time buyers today, the goal can really seem insurmountable. Mortgage rates might be down from where they were in the second half of 2023, but they're significantly higher than they were for the several years before that. Monthly payments have roughly doubled for a median-priced home, and my colleague Jay Backow and I have talked several times on this podcast about how many homeowners feel like they're locked into those lower rates. And they're staying put because they just don't want to give up a 2 or 3 handle mortgage rate for something that has a 6 in front of it. But Sarah, as we know, this is bigger than just first-time buyers. Now, they often start the housing transaction chain, and when they can't buy, current owners may not be able to sell and trade up. That slows turnover across the market, and it also reduces activity tied to housing, from mortgages and renovations to moving and furniture, and it can keep would-be buyers renting for longer, which adds pressure to rental demand. So how do you see this situation? Is this just another affordability squeeze, or has the housing market reset to a higher barrier to entry?
I do think that we're on the upper bound of affordability pressures. This is about as bad as it's going to get. But as we discussed in our recent publication of The Economy Explained, unfortunately, we do think that the housing market is resetting at a structurally higher barrier to entry. There's a lot of reasons for that. The first is higher interest rates. Yes, mortgage rates are sitting at around 6.5%, and they should come down from here, but maybe not better than 5.5%, right? In an optimistic scenario. The second is demographic pressures. Remember, we have this tremendous aging population of baby boomers. All of their children are now entering their prime home buying years. So there's a lot of demand for ownership. The third and fourth ones are land regulation and permitting, which is at the state and local level, really hard to change. And the last one is climate risk. It's just raising insurance pricing and making it much more difficult to buy a home. So overall, we see a world where, yes, mortgage rates come down a bit, improve affordability marginally, but we think neutral and other interest rates at the longer end of the curve are going to be higher than the post-financial crisis period. And what we're going to see is that those forces are going to widen the divide between who can own a home and who cannot, and who gains from that wealth accumulation and who does not.
All right. So now you mentioned where mortgage rates are today, above that 6% rate. Rates did briefly in February. We got below 6% before they bounced back up here. Why did that short-lived relief matter so much?
I think that short-lived relief showed us that moves in the mortgage rate make a difference, but things are so unaffordable that it didn't make that much of a difference. So the dip below 6% was very exciting. It happened this past February. It was the first time that mortgage rates fell below 6% since 2022. And we saw a few things happen. First, it lowered the monthly payment for first-time home buyers from about $2,200 a month to $1,900. So makes a bit of a difference. And it lowered the share of income that goes towards monthly mortgage payments from about 26% of income to 22% from peak to trough. So that is a notable improvement. But what we saw in the new home sales data and the existing home sales data, that it did not drive people back into the housing market. I want to turn it back to you, though, Jim, because you've actually done a lot of interesting work on this and how this change in mortgage rates has changed the monthly cost that people have to pay for a median-priced home. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So we talk about the lock-in effect a lot, and it's kind of easy to point to, well, there are a lot of people with mortgage rates that are around 3% or 3.5%, and the prevailing rate's at 6%, and that's a lot higher, so they're locked in. But when we look at the actual numbers in terms of what we're asking a homeowner to do, to list their home for sale and move to another home today, pay off that existing mortgage, take out a new one. When you take into account how much higher home prices are today, you bought a home in 2016, for instance, right? Let's assume you refinanced in 2020 or 2021 if you still live there, right? Most homeowners did. So you've actually taken your monthly payment and it is lower today than it was when you bought your home in 2016. If we assume that your income has risen alongside just median household income over that time period, your monthly payment as a share of your income today is probably sub 8%. If you bought over the past 3 years, Your monthly payment is a share of your income. You mentioned some numbers earlier. It's low to mid 20%. From a dollar amount perspective, if you were to pay off that 2016 mortgage, as an example, and take out one today, your payment is probably $1,300 or $1,400 higher. It's like a 200% increase. That's very difficult economically for a lot of households, and that's the kind of physical manifestation of that lock-in effect. Now, Sarah, given this significant change in housing math, what does that mean for who is actually able to buy in this market?
It's making who's able to buy into the market a lot more selective. So what we're seeing is that first-time homebuyers today are actually not meaningfully older. They're still about 36 years old, but they are a much more selective group financially. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York put out a great analysis on this recently, and they basically found that the first-time homebuyer profile today is taking out a mortgage that's nearly $350,000 compared to $240,000 in 2019 and $200,000 a decade ago. So significant increase in mortgage balances. At the same time, credit standards have tightened significantly. So that average credit score to get a mortgage has risen quite a bit over the last 5 to 10 years. And what this is doing is it's shifting who can buy and also where they can buy. So we're seeing high.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 V CN20210130。
Higher quality home buyers moving to lower income zip codes. So buying cheaper homes in lower income metro areas. And so it's wealthier buyers in lower income areas. And that's the really big shift that we're seeing. It's a demand resorting story. And what we're also seeing, and we hear this a lot when we talk to our financial advisors and their clients, is that family is increasingly helping their other family members put that down payment down, in particular parents helping their children buy that first home. So we're seeing that first-time buyers may be feeling this pressure right when it comes to rates. How much of this affordability issue, though, is being driven by the locked-in effect specifically?
So, look, it's clearly playing a role. We just talked about some of the math behind that. But then when you look at what that means on a nationwide basis, when it comes to inventory, when it comes to so many other aspects of this, that homeowner who's unwilling to give up that lower mortgage rate, that lower payment, right? Their homes are off the market. Existing inventories for sale, they've picked up from historic lows in 2023, but they're still very, very low on a long run basis. The fewer homes there are for sale, the more upward pressure or the absence of downward pressure that's going to put on home prices, right? We saw affordability plummet in 2022 and 2023 when rates backed up. We saw existing home sales really, really come down as a result. But home prices remained at record highs. They continued to set new record highs. For home prices to actually come down, right, you need people who are willing to sell at lower home prices. Sarah, you just mentioned that lending standards themselves remain tight. Mm-hmm. Those forced sales, those tend to be distressed transactions. We don't see that distress in the market providing the inventory and the motivated inventory to lead to softer home prices. So it's really that lack of inventory, which we think is in large part driven by the lock-in effect, that's kept home prices. And as a result, that piece of the affordability equation kind of stuck at these higher levels.
I mean, it's really this vicious cycle of the locked-in effect, making it difficult for entry-level buyers to get into the market, and then fewer existing homeowners sell or trade up or relocate. So on and on it goes. Are there broader implications of this freeze?
Right. So we just talked about what that means from an inventory perspective. And then if you think about affordability remaining challenged, lending standards themselves remaining tight, inventory remaining as low as it is, you could argue that we're at one of the more difficult times that we've seen for renters to exit rentership and step into homeownership. Now, there's a lot of different things that drive rent growth. And the fact that you have a stuck renter is just one of them. The other side of that equation can be the supply of rental units, right? So that's just a piece of the equation. But those are some of the externalities that we think about when it comes to how the tightness of the housing market, what the lock-in effect and what affordability is doing there. But outside of the housing market, Sarah, the wider economy, like how do these housing costs play a role there?
Massive effect. Some of the work that we've done shows that housing affordability is the number one driver pushing down fertility rates in America, the number one driver above childcare costs, above finding a partner, finding a good job. It's housing affordability. So you could see how that could pretty significantly ripple through the broader economy. But there's other components, right? So as we discussed earlier, it's driving migration from unaffordable areas to more affordable regions. That has significant implications. And then putting my consumer economist hat on, as we discussed earlier in the podcast, when people buy a home, they tie themselves to that home. They spend money on couches, on beds, on TVs, right? Durable goods. And if we're going to have more people as renters for longer, that's going to expand the services economy at the expense of the goods economy. All right, let's take a step back and think about where this is all going. It hasn't been a very optimistic conversation. Jim, what is the outlook for affordability in your view? Do we get anywhere back to the post-financial crisis period or even the pre-financial crisis period?
When it comes to the outlook for mortgage rates, the outlook for affordability, the outlook for the U.S. housing market, look, we just, throughout Morgan Stanley Research and Strategy, published our 2026 major outlook. From now through the end of 2027, we don't have conventional mortgage rates getting below 6%. We do have affordability improving on the margins. We have income growth exceeding home price appreciation that makes it a little bit better, but that doesn't get us back to the post-GFC affordability era, which was very, very affordable looking back over the past several decades. It gets us closer to where we were pre-GFC, not all the way back there. But when we think about how that ripples through the housing market and how we think about that evolving from here, look, we do think that the state of mortgage credit availability means there will be a lack of distress. We think that while affordability itself may be challenged and inventories may be low, there is some level of housing activity that has to occur regardless of where mortgage rates are or affordability is. We think we found that level. We think there's support for home sales at these current levels. And that combination of support for home sales, lack of inventory, means that home prices, very little room for them to grow from here, but we think they're going to be pretty supported. So from a housing market perspective at a 10,000 foot view, we're calling it 1-2% growth in sales, in home prices, well supported, but the affordability outlook that we've outlined throughout this podcast, challenged to see a lot of acceleration. Now, when we pull it back to the first time home buyer, based on our conversation, it seems that the key question is becoming less about when to buy, more about who can still afford to enter the market. But Sarah, it's really been great talking with you about the housing market today.
It was great speaking with you, Jim.
And thanks for listening. If you enjoy Thoughts on the Market, please leave us a review wherever you listen and share the podcast with a friend or colleague today.
The preceding content is informational only and based on information available when created. It is not an offer or solicitation, nor is it tax or legal advice. It does not consider your financial circumstances and objectives and may not be suitable for you.